Who are you?
Tim Callender.
Summer Brooks.
Brett Filipek.
We host the Babylon podcast.
What do you want?
To study and discuss the Babylon 5 universe.
Where are you going?
To discover every scrap of B5 memorabilia.
Who do you serve, and who do you trust?
And welcome back to another Babylon podcast. I am Summer Brooks.
I am Tim Callender.
And I don't know if Brett is actually going to join us. He could be just lurking.
Ooh, lurking Brett.
Mm-hmm.
He's probably using his children as an excuse. That's okay. I would too if I had him lurking around, but they're not lurking around.
Why?
My kids
why?
Are bigger, so it doesn't really, that's never been a problem.
Well, no, see, that's where you use the excuse more often. Hi, my kid's in jail. I gotta go.
Yeah, see, I've been playing the game wrong the whole
when they're little, you can say, yeah, I've gotta take him to the doctor. You know, I've gotta take him to see his grandparents. When they're older, you can play the truant role.
Yeah, right, exactly. Oh, I've lost my opportunity. So one is out of the house and the other's living with mom. So never mind then. Okay. It's all good. Summer, how was your holiday?
Not as productive as I hoped. I thought, you know, having 10 days off, I'd be able to get a lot of stuff done.
Yeah.
You'd be amazed at how little stuff you actually get done when you realize I have 10 days off and I can go sleep. That's not a good combination.
Well, it's what you need.
It is what I need. It's desperately what I need. I'm going to pay the price though, because my next couple of paychecks are going to be light. Yes, I don't get paid time off. Kind of sucks.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but I'm working it.
That's good. Jeremy, how was your holiday?
Not great. I was sick. Blah.
No, I'm sorry to hear that.
Other than that, it was good.
You can't be sick for a holiday. That just takes the fun out of having a holiday.
Yeah, I know. I had the time off and just laid around, and I only watched TV half the time. Of course, I did get through almost all of Xena and Hercules, so.
Good for you. No wonder you're sick.
Now, you mean like you broke out the DVDs or the streaming and watched most of both series?
Yeah, Netflix. Yeah, I even watched them at the same time when they were played together.
Golf clap, sir. Golf clap.
Yes.
It was interesting watching it because I watched it when it first came out, and then going back again, seeing all the little things I missed, and seeing all the actors that I now recognize playing these parts is like, wow.
Now that person's famous, and so is that one.
Yeah, I think I lit up at IMDb, and like every other episode, I'm looking up two or three people. I'm like, wow, this is crazy.
Yeah, I too watched a lot of Hercules and Xena back in the day. I actually own the entire Xena series on DVD. And yes, my Xena knowledge is not
awesome.
Quite as encyclopedic as my Babylon 5 knowledge. But for a while there, it was close. I even got my name in a book about Xena.
Wow.
The TV. Yes, my name is in the credits. It's kind of funny.
The only Xena thing that I can claim is that we start calling my sister Deb Xena because my cousin Charlie started dating a Deb. And it was the only way to keep them separate for a while.
So you couldn't do Deb 1 and Deb 2?
No, no.
Okay.
Xena's a little more fitting anyways. She's got a black belt, so.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So there we are. So looking around the web, there appears to be, it's all quiet on the J. Michael Straczynski front, which means he's probably writing on five different things. but not anything that I could find, so I don't know what else is going on there. Clearly, there's nothing happening on the Babylon 5 front. I think that tall grass got mown. Remember the tall grass that had movement in it?
Yes.
Yeah.
So basically, you're saying we're keeping an eye out for movement in the tall grass, and while we weren't watching, somebody came by.
Oh, yeah. It was the highway crew.
With a hay baler and just mowed.
Man, yep, exactly.
A combine. There you go. Not just a lawnmower.
No.
Not just a John Deere.
No, it was heavy machinery, absolutely.
Combine.
Yeah.
So we were looking for movement in the grass, and the grass got it.
Right. But thanks to all the patient fans who have been sticking with us in this turbulent time of upheaval for the podcast.
Ooh, Neil said something, too. There's been no teases from Jason about new Crusade books.
Yes, that's the other thing. It's been very quiet from that end as well, so I don't know. You remember the multi-volume series Crusade, What the Hell Happened, that promised to reveal everything that happened to Crusade? Got two volumes in. What the hell happened? I think that show's just doomed from the start. Anything having to do with it.
No, I think either Jason is chained to a desk working on that last volume, or they sent him on a scouting mission to the bottom of some as yet previously unexplored ruins.
Well, that could be.
And he and Eilerson got lost in the catacombs, bringing new Crusade treasures out.
Yeah. Wouldn't that be nice? No, that's what they're going to find probably is the 10-story treatments for Legend of the Rangers that we'll read and go, oh my God, it would have been the best show ever!
Oh boy.
Hey, I have a suggestion.
Uh-huh.
Why don't we take a quick break and then come back and take care of some voicemails?
Yes.
We got one or two.
Just a couple.
Guy. Yeah, the warp drive. Hand it over.
Your culture is primitive, yet so funky.
All right, feedback of Palooza time, people.
Yes, you brought it on.
Yes, you give us messages, you send us questions, we do our best to answer, or speculate, or whatever we need to do.
And I apologize ahead of time. I don't know if this is the correct order, so we may have some temporal incongruence. So,
all right. We like that.
Here we go.
Hey, Badcasters. It's our goal listening to the Neil Palooza episode. Summer, if you go to Amazon.com, this might not still be true, but it was last I looked. You can get season 2 of Jeremiah on DVD, but it's like part of like this weird special order thing, which means it costs a little more than it normally would for a season box set because they didn't like, you know, mass produce a bunch. They basically make them on demand. But it's a service available. That's how my dad was able to get the second season of the War of the Worlds TV series, although why anyone would get the second season, because that was the season where they killed off all but one of the most interesting characters, is beyond me, but, you know, there you go. Again, I don't know if this is still true, but if they have it, you can probably get it. All right, talk to you later. Bye.
Special deal, huh? That sounds kind of worrisome.
I saw that entry. Somebody made me aware of it a while ago, and I looked at it, and it smelled like, you know how on eBay you see that, hey, 5 DVDs get all 200 episodes of Stargate?
Yeah.
It smelled like one of those deals, and I didn't want to go anywhere near it.
Yeah.
Because there's no labeling, there's no cover art.
Right.
And I'm like, literally, is that just a sign of how broke MGM is?
or is it
to one of their interns and go, hey, we can't pay you for the past year of work you've done, but here, sell Jeremiah on Amazon for us, you know?
Right. No, I wonder if it's subtitles are in Russian.
Hey, guys, wrapping up here. Just listening to the latest Neil Palooza feedback show, and they're asking about whether or not we'd ever see pictures of Summer Brooks on the website. Believe it or not, I've actually seen a picture of Summer Brooks, and they're lying to you. The reason she doesn't want to put it up on the website is because she looks exactly like Lucy Liu in Kill Bill, and she doesn't want to confuse everybody out there. Now, obviously, she doesn't sound anything like Lucy Liu, but she looks exactly like her. So that's just it. They don't want to mess with your heads. So just imagine Lucy Liu with that sultry tones of Summer Brooks, and there you have it. Take care. Wrap it out.
Rapid, I'm just impressed that you've survived to tell the tale. We consider Summer on par with the Lost Ark of the Covenant. For the most part, she's in a wooden crate in the bowels of a government warehouse somewhere, and we can't reveal that location.
You know that scene in Kill Bill Volume 1 where Lucy Liu told her colleagues never to mention her Chinese or American heritage anymore?
Similar thing, huh?
Well, my temper has been known to do that. The only thing missing was the sword. But yeah, other than that, wow.
Cool. Hey, they just call it like they see it. You know, I mean, that's how it goes.
Hey, Babcasters, this is Gary, and I'm listening to show 254. And the specific point that I want to call shenanigans on is that a thieves guild has a weapon strong enough to knock a White Star out. A White Star could almost, well, it could actually take a hit from a shadow vessel at least for a few seconds before it would explode. So are you telling me that they're generating as much, if not more, destructive power than a shadow vessel can? I still find that to be quite a lot of plutonium to load their weapons with to make that happen. I'm surprised nobody else called them on it, but I will. I can't imagine a thieves guild having power like that, no matter where they get them from, the Centauri or anything else. That seems awfully stretching. I'll talk to you later, guys. Bye.
You know, Gary, I thought the same thing when I read the treatment for that, and for people who aren't up to snuff, this is a point in Fiona Avery's treatment for Tried and True, the Crusades script featuring Dorina visiting her mentor, and the Thieves Guild takes out a White Star in the middle of a raid or whatever. I just assumed that would have been something that would be addressed when they went into production, whether they would have found another way around it or something. Because otherwise, I'm with you. That rang completely false for me as well.
Based on how much firepower the Raiders had, you know, they had their own little base ship or, you know, base station for a while. I was willing to wait and see how they worked that out in, you know, in story development. But I would think that somebody destroying a White Star would bring down the wrath of the Rangers.
Well, and that's...
That kind of attention is not something that that they'd want, the guild would want.
Unless, of course, that would have been yet another mystery upon a mystery that would have been developed had the show go on. I don't know. Again, you know, it's as I said before, this is part of the appeal, I guess, of going through these script treatments, but also sort of the frustration of it. It's like, you know, how much of this would have hit production? You know, would Straczynski look at that and go, oh, yeah, no, that's not going to work? Or if they would have missed it, and then, you know, we as fans watching the episode would have called, you know, shenanigans on it. I don't know. Hard to say.
This is Nefer Bowie listening to show 249, at the point where you were talking about it's Tim's opinion that some of the short stories and the comics were just tossed off. And I never did read that Space Time and the Curable romantic short story. Never got my hands on that. So I did read some of the short stories that were in the Babylon 5 magazine, which I thought were interesting. The of the comics, I thought In Balaam's Name, I thought I enjoyed that a lot. And I also enjoyed there was a four-issue series telling about what happened with Garibaldi and Sinclair on Mars. And I thought those four issues plus the In Balaam's Name were the best of the comics. Anyway, we can discuss all that more later on when you get to the comics, and I think you should discuss these short stories at some point, too. That's all.
No, fair enough. I have to say the only comics that I read was part of the miniseries about Sinclair when he first arrives on Minbar. And he's, as I recall, framed for murder, which is interesting because I don't and to Dream in the Cities of City of Sorrows, I don't recall a corresponding storyline. So that'll be interesting to delve into that, and people who are more familiar with the comics than I am, feel free to call me out on that. I'm not saying that I'm an expert at all. I was very disappointed with the comics, so I never really pursued it like I would have other B5 items.
Okay, so does this mean you're going to make me break out the chronologies and figure out where in the timeline this is supposed to be?
Of course! Of course, here's the other thing, and I am truly asking this question. This isn't a rhetorical question. Are the comics considered canon? I know that the two or three short stories that Straczynski wrote are considered canon.
I thought Balin's Name was considered canon.
Okay.
I don't know about the other ones.
Okay. Well, this is good because I'm sure we'll get some voicemails setting us straight on that.
If anybody has all of the Babylon 5 comics, not just in Balin's Name, email me or email us. And
yeah.
Let us know where they are, because I actually don't think I ever saw the other ones.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know what to say.
Okay, let's take a really quick break, just because
okay.
I want to squeeze in some more promos and pimp some other friendly podcasts and give Gary some more potholes.
All right.
The quill is the most powerful of all tools. Not as blunt as a workman's hammer, nor as precise as a watchmaker's screwdriver. But when dipped in ink and applied to a blank page of a leather-bound book, the infinite power of human imagination is revealed. Whole worlds are created from a single idea. With a quill, all worlds are possible. From the library known as the Quillian Chronicles.
Please check out thequillians.com.
And we are back, and hopefully I sound better.
you sound much more like Lucy Liu. Or wait. Or Lucy Liu sounds more like you. I don't know.
We'll figure it out. Or maybe not. Add to the mystery. Add to the mystery.
That's right. We got more voicemails.
Let's go.
Hello, this is Neil from Bowie. I'm listening to the November 9 live feed. And I just heard the sympathy for Mr. Morden. That was just phenomenal. Kudos to the artist on that. That was just very well done. And it'd be interesting. I wonder if they have any other Babylon 5 related material. That's all.
Hmm. My favorite topic. Babylon 5 parody songs. We have Mr. Londo, Just Mr. Londo. Done to the theme of Just a Gigolo, which I think is hilarious.
Yep.
You've got the 5 Years by Tom Smith.
Yep.
There's For Whom Babylon Tolls.
Yep.
By Cy Fried, which is just magnificent.
No Sleep Till Babylon.
No Sleep Till Babylon, yes. Another Luke Ski.
Yep.
There's one more. I'm drawing a blank on it. I believe Gary played 4 of them for our holiday specials in either 2007 or 2008. There's like 4 holiday specials. There's 4 different Babylon 5 parody songs. Gary went above and beyond the call of geekdom there.
That's what he does.
But as always, if you find more, let us know.
Yep.
Hello, this is Neil from Bowie. Listening to the November 9 live feed. Anyway, there was talk about the collectible card game, and I was there at the beginning of that, and I even remember playing the game while waiting in line for Stephen's first appearance during the run of the show. There was Babylon 5 on tour appearances at malls and so forth. Anyway, I sent you a whole bunch of links for where you can find all the images of the sets for the game, and including a link to images of sets that never were published as well. Anyway, lots of good information there. Check your email. That's all.
All right, will do. That sounded like I was getting called out, but that's okay. I deserved it. Yes, we'll dig through the emails. We'll find them all. We're going to post it.
I would like to find out more of the backstory behind the sets that were never published. Because it sounds like somebody got a hold of the artwork for cards that were going to be published, and then they just weren't published. I'm like, what's the story there?
Who knows? There's so many things like that in the Babylon 5 universe.
And it's our job to make sure that information is not lost in time and space, like Babylon 4, okay?
I'm tired. I need a nap.
Look at it this way. At least there's not 45 years of stuff to catalog mentally like there is for Doctor Who.
Yeah, right, or Star Trek. Yeah, no, I'm with you. I'm with you on that.
Hey, Babcasters, it's Gary, and I wanted to talk about the latest little brouhaha with JMS. Recently on his Facebook page, or at least as I'm recording this, it was recently, he posted some of the sales figures for while he was doing Amazing Spider-Man and while other artists or writers were doing it. And, of course, the sales were less. And it might have been a bit of chest beating on his part, but at the same time, he is trying to make the point that he was a profitable writer to have on the series and that perhaps he shouldn't have been let go in his ideas since people enjoyed picking them up had some merit. I have to say, I personally, as, of course, a fan of JMS, I do agree with that. But at the same time, there were a lot of naysayers saying he was putting down the other people. And I really don't feel that was his intention, but that's some people's take on it. I'd love to hear what you guys think about that. Is it okay for writers or artists to sort of blow their own horn, so to speak, and say that, look how good I was or am? I'll talk to you later, guys. Bye.
Gary, sweetheart? Haven't you noticed that a lot of authors and screenwriters and directors and sometimes actors do that too? It's called self-promotion because the company that has absconded with the intellectual rights to what they've created sometimes don't put in a lot of effort.
Well, I will say this because I've done a little reading on the JMS Twitter feed just to kind of poke around and see what's there. And the one thing that I have noticed is that JMS does not suffer fools gladly. So he tends to be very what's the word I'm looking for? Well, I was trying to find something diplomatic, but he tends to bring a gun to a knife fight in those situations, shall we say.
And I believe the phrase you are looking for is verbally and intellectually eviscerate.
Yeah, while I can't say I necessarily blame him, I think sometimes it comes off a little, you know, he's not the kind of guy to say it diplomatically, you know. You read through some of the tweets and it'll give somebody, okay, once or twice, hey, you want to think about what you're saying, buddy? And then if they kind of continue down the path that they're on, he'll say, okay, here's the deal. And I think that's, given that that's sort of how he comes across sometimes on the interwebs, I can see where someone might think that JMS is thumbing his nose when he points to the fact that the sales figures were higher when he was writing the book. But, you know, the facts are the facts. That's the other part of it, too, that you have to remember, mm-hmm. You know. You can't have opinions about truth.
Yeah. I don't know how you can compete between different writers of like a series, a comic book, whether it be novels, comic books, movies, whatever. Most people don't care who wrote it. They just care if it was good or not, you know?
Well,
and I've heard the arguments. Some people liked some of the stuff he did, some people didn't.
Yeah, no, that's true. You know? And that is true.
That's for just about everything anybody has put out there, you know?
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, hey, if you were proud of what you did and you're willing to stand up and stand behind it when some fanboy or fangirl starts going, nah, 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 but, well, I mean, seriously, really?
Yeah, well, you know, I'm not going to argue with them either. You know, that's the other part of it.
Yeah, if you're going to argue, you might want to come pack in your credentials.
Yes, exactly, exactly. And whatever you say about him, JMS has credentials. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah. I mean, he's got, two more Hugos than I do, so who am I to complain?
Yeah, right.
So,
Hey, Babcast, this is Gary, and I'm listening to the latest Neil-a-palooza. I really prefer those Gary ones, but it's the Neil ones are good listening to. Anyway, I'm listening to Summer and Tim talk about how you really can't skip season two because of so many fine points that you end up missing that are not only fine in and of themselves, but tie in later on. And then Summer starts talking about a short list, and I can think of very few exceptions to come up with a short list. I think that list will still be rather lengthy and composed. Do you really think you could cut Babylon 5 down to, say, like 50 or 60 episodes and at least well put across the story that JMS is trying to put? Or do you really need pretty much the whole thing part and parcel? Very few episodes in Babylon 5 I felt really had filler episodes. So I have to say, I think this, quote, reader's guide list that Summer's proposing is still going to be pretty darn lengthy. I'll talk to you guys later.
It's not going to be, you know, here's six episodes per season that you need to watch and that's it. It's not going to be extremely cut down because most of season three... You can't cut out a lot of season 3 or season 4 in my mind.
Is it going to be more of an exclusion list?
It might be.
Here's the episodes to avoid.
Here's my thinking behind creating such a list. Attention spans are shorter now than there were in 1994.
I would say something else, but go on.
Go for it.
Well, I'm not so much thinking attention spans. I'm thinking because when I think about people who I've tried to get interested in Babylon 5 and people who ordinarily would be interested in Babylon 5, science fiction fans or just people, I think today I think there's so much that people have to choose from to use their time on, that it's difficult to find a hook to get people interested in Babylon 5 these days. And I think about friends that I've got who haven't seen B5, they'd love it, but what's the hook? The novel for television where you've got a beginning, a middle, and an end. Well, there's a number of series that have done that since, so that's not really new.
And that's what I mean by a short attention span. They look at it and say, okay, there's five seasons of this. Where the first three episodes are not going to hook.
No, I know.
They're not going to get people invested.
Right, I agree. And when I think about the thing that hooked me on Babylon 5 up immediately when I saw Midnight on the Firing Line, it was as a science fiction fan, because I knew instantly watching the show that someone who understood what science fiction was and the history of the genre was writing this. But your average person, even your average person who might like Star Wars or Star Trek or whatever, and they might be watching X-Files, that's not gonna grab them. Jump points opening in Sector 3, what?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm with you, Summer. At some point, there's got to be an essential reading list. Okay, look, if you're going to get somebody into it, here are the episodes you need to give them to get them hooked. And it can't be any more than five or six for starters.
I think it actually might be a little easier now, since I think season one and season two are available free for streaming on Hulu and at the WB.com. And people would be more inclined to stream three or four episodes rather than, I got to break out this DVD that I borrowed from so-and-so. And so I think streaming might help now more so than it did like 10 years ago. It's easy to get people hooked on Firefly because there's only 13 episodes to watch. You can knock that out
also,
on the weekend.
Here's the other thing, though. It's also newer, and it's got the Western thing grafted on it, and that's something that a wider number of people understand. I really think one of the reasons that Battlestar Galactica was so successful, and yes, it had great writing. I'm not taking away any of that kind of stuff, and the performances are fabulous. But I think the fact is, from a production design standpoint, it didn't look any different than what people could see out their front doors. Except it had spaceships. Same thing with Firefly. And you know what? Everybody's seen a Western. Everybody knows Gunsmoke. Everybody knows John Wayne. Okay? And this has got spaceships. Babylon 5 is all spaceships. And guys with weird hair.
And so was Star Trek. What's your point?
Well, Star Trek, but see, here's, it's revisionist history at this point, but Star Trek wasn't as popular as it became afterwards.
All right,
like Star Trek before Star Trek.
Compare
There's been plenty like
Star
Babylon
Trek,
5 afterwards.
Right, compare Star Trek Next Generation with Babylon 5, which is sort of in the same territory. Compare
brand recognition. Because by the time Next Generation rolls around, there is enough brand recognition for Paramount to take the chance to mount a new production.
How are you going to get a non-sci-fi person to sit down and watch Star Trek? You're not.
No, I agree with you there. Yeah.
Okay, the thing is to try to get newer sci-fi fans to realize how good some of the older stuff is. I mean, I just read an article this week, believe it or not, made me want to strangle somebody. the recent head of marketing at Disney was let go.
Because, yes, I saw that.
And I quote, she was the one who pushed them to change John Carter of Mars to just John Carter. Because John Carter of Mars was not a recognizable name. I'm like, it's a piece of classic literature, you insufferable.
No, I know, but that's because
Anyway, John Carter has no name recognition. John Carter of Mars does.
Yes.
But because John Carter of Mars is old literature, nobody's going to recognize it. What? You're talking in circles.
No, I
put
know,
the crack
I know.
Pipe down.
I know.
So if that movie flops, it's all her fault.
Well, anyway.
So yeah,
that's a whole other tangent. No,
it's a related tangent because newer sci-fi fans don't have the.
Well, they're going to look at that and they're going to say, oh, geez, this is just like Star Wars and Conan.
They don't have the foundation in the older sci-fi that we grew up with. They have no interest in going back and reading it. Hell, for 20 years, some of the best stuff has been out of print. How criminal is that? So they haven't been nurtured on that kind of depth of storytelling. You know, they've come up with these crap sci-fi movies that are done and they think they're good, you know. So how do you change the palette, so to speak, of a younger generation of sci-fi fans who would enjoy some of the storytelling in Babylon 5 who just they're like, oh, that's a 20-year-old show. I don't want to watch that. Why not? That there's a mental block there that you have to get around. I mean, look at what Star Wars has done. You've got the old farts like us,
yeah,
who think the original trilogy is great and the sequel trilogy or the prequel trilogy is meh.
Yeah.
But then you've got the kids who think the prequel trilogy is great and that the original trilogy just has, you know, it could use better effects.
Yeah, well, I'm with you. I don't know, and I don't know if there's any answer to that or not without coming across like an old fogey. Our music was better than yours anyway. and maybe in a sense that's kind of the point. Ultimately, is that in the same way that John Carter of Mars or the Lensman series served as the foundation for a certain generation of science fiction writers. And those writers, you know, let's look at it this way. We'll bring it back to the show. Straczynski has as much as said is that Lensman is one of the inspirations for what he did with Babylon 5. Okay. Well, the average B5 fan, have they ever read the Lensman series? I don't know. My guess is probably not, because I know, you know, some friends of mine who really enjoyed the show weren't necessarily science. They liked the genre, but not hardcore readers. So they'd never heard of the Lensman trilogy or series. But I think the point is that going forward, you know, some of what Battlestar Galactica was able to achieve is in part due to the road that B5 paved ahead of them in terms of opening up the ability to tell a story and say, hey, look, we are going to take this amount of much time to tell our story and things are going to change. And the average person who watched Battlestar Galactica probably never even heard of Babylon 5. So, you know, I guess the question is that a good thing or a bad thing? And is that just simply an arbitrary judgment that we're making because we're hardcore fans?
It's a problem that needs to be solved. There has to be an easier way to introduce newer sci-fi fans to older sci-fi. And if it means providing a shortcut to Babylon 5 or a shortcut to X-Files or a shortcut to whatever. But, you know, even the new Battlestar Galactica. I love the first two seasons. The second, the third, and fourth seasons are hit and miss for me. You know.
Sure, but that's a different thing than trying to get somebody to watch older science fiction, and wondering, you know, how do we? And I'm not saying that we should give up on it. I don't have any. I guess really what I'm saying is I don't have a ready answer for this. I don't know what the answer is.
And I see it.
And I guess I'm just trying to redefine the problem, saying, well, if there isn't an answer, is there? Are we looking for a problem to make up an answer for?
No, we don't know why Babylon 5 keeps getting the short stick. We don't know. I mean, how many messages do we get every month saying, hey, I just discovered Babylon 5? What's driving that?
I don't know. Maybe somebody out there is doing a better job than we are at getting people to watch the show.
There are a whole lot of Babylon 5 podcasts out there now, and I'm like, dude, we've been here for 7 years. Where have you been?
Maybe it's just a lack of good programming forcing people to look for something else.
Yeah, it's possible. I'm getting bored with TV myself. Although Once Upon a Time is awesome.
Like it.
I haven't watched it.
All episodes.
I spent too much time playing my guitar.
You can watch it free on Hulu. Anyway.
You can watch it on ABC as well.
Esther? ABC.com. Ding. How many more voicemails do we have? Because I think we went down the tangent a little too far.
Yeah.
We had three, but one of them was just you calling in to test the voicemail, so we really only have two.
Okay. We can still play that one. What the heck?
No, I took it out of the rotation. It's too late.
Oh, jeez. You're no fun.
Well, you know, I did turn one of Gary's into, it was three, and I turned it into one, so you didn't even notice, did you?
No, we didn't. Good job on your part.
Hey, Babcasters, it's Gary, and as long as we're on real space travel, you guys are talking about Mars and things of that nature, and not rushing things. Well, it's not that we're rushing things to get to Mars, but real scientific research is being done right now as we speak. The Curiosity probe that recently launched and will be at Mars in about 8 months has a special radiation detector built inside of it to help detect how much radiation that astronauts in a spacecraft will be exposed to as they travel to Mars. A lot of this for us is still new virgin territory, and we haven't really studied this kind of level of detail of radiation exposures. So for the next 8 months, while the probe is going, it will detect, hopefully, what is non-fatal radiation, and if it does, what types of radiation, so that the future Mars crafts can actually be built specially to, hopefully, block.
That was the end. It cut off.
Oh, I was going to say, so Gary gets three emails, voicemails put into one, and then he gets one that's made into like half.
Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah.
That's all that was there.
No. Gary, excellent point. And I've been doing a lot of reading here when I'm not playing my guitar. There's a lot of activity on the spaceflight front. It's just not necessarily all manned. Yeah, maybe we just need to be a little more patient. Maybe the Apollo, which is one of the grandest adventures ever, wasn't Christopher Columbus, but maybe it was Leif Erikson. So, you know, I just would like, at this point, not even my own lifetime, I'd like my kids to see a man land on another planet so they can know what that was like.
Yeah.
I had a conversation. There was I attended a workshop, for lack of a better term, a seminar for web designers and developers, and the guy doing the presentation was using Apollo imagery to demo some new features in CSS3 syntax and that kind of stuff. And after it was over, you know, I went up to him. I said, you know, because I knew that obviously the guy was younger than me by, you know, 15, 20 years. And I said, you know,
dude, you have no idea what it was like when we were sending men to the moon. You know, the world stopped when that was going on. There's nothing, there's never been anything like it before, and really nothing since. You know, and I think for those of us who are alive and fortunate enough to see that, I think that's what, as much as anything, we're looking for is to recapture that feeling when it was like, all right, you know, class stops. You know, you stop going on, you pull the car over in your family vacation and find a hotel so that you can get a TV and watch Neil Armstrong take a step out. That's the kind of thing I think that when people of a certain generation think of what spaceflight and manned spaceflight means, I think that's really kind of the core of it. But by the flip side, we've got probes all over the solar system like you would not believe. New Horizons is still, well, less than 10 years away from getting to Pluto and the other Kuiper Belt objects. You know, but it zipped past Jupiter. Jupiter is a pretty well-visited place at this point. Mars is becoming a destination point. You know, we're sending probes on a regular basis out that way. We've got Messenger around Mercury. The James Webb Space Telescope is being put together. I mean, it's just the body of knowledge that we're amassing is amazing. And it is almost like a golden age of space exploration. It's just a shame that it's robots and not people doing it. But similar to the Babylon 5 argument we were having before, you know, maybe we're just pissed off about it because that's just our generation, you know, and the next generation, and we're not so keen on sending men when, you know, we're getting great pictures from Opportunity and Curiosity and whatever else, so... All right, there you go. I'm stepping down off my soapbox. Thank you.
All them whippersnappers got to get off my lawn.
Right. When I was a kid, we had to walk both ways uphill to Mars. And we had no spacesuit.
Hello, this is Neil from Bowie. Happy New Year. I'm listening to some of the live feeds that I hadn't gotten around to listen to yet. And I just bit the November 9th. One, and heard the He's a Vorlon song, which is priceless, and I just had to call in. That just was amazing. That's all.
Was that the one we were missing in the list?
I think so.
Yes, it was. Yes, it was. Well, Neil, feel free to write your own song. We're not saying that you can't.
I think I actually threw some lyrics at Edmund sometime last year. I don't know what he done, or if he managed to do anything with those or not.
I don't know.
Yeah, because you remember, because he did. He did
My Funny Vorlontine.
Yeah, my funny yep. Vorlontine. But he also did a promo for us, the Babcast Isle one.
Yes.
And what was the other one? I'm drawing a blank on the other one, but the Babcast Isle one was just silly.
Yes.
Absolute silliness.
That's the last one, by the way.
Last voicemail.
Wow. For now, I think if you check the Babcast Gmail account, you'd see some.
There'd be some more. There'd be a few more. So what do we have coming up next? We still have to do
I think
little parts.
We've got one or two. Don't we have one or two unfinished, unproduced scripts from Crusade?
I know Little Bugs is one of them.
Yep. That's the one I'm thinking of. Maybe that's it.
I think that might be the last one.
Yep. Yeah. I think you're right. And then novels.
Technically
we should be doing Legend of the Rangers.
Yes.
Okay.
And then novels.
Yes.
Well, actually, no. Are we doing Parliament of Dreams first?
Should we do that after Rangers?
Yeah, we should do that after Rangers because that's sort of an overview of the academia
Right.
Yeah.
Don't say I haven't got to read it all yet.
There you go.
I did get my book, by the way.
Oh, good.
Woo! Have you broken my book out and done your homework, Tim?
No.
No.
So now I'm going to have to.
You have to, because you have to send it back to me so I can do mine.
Okay, well then I'll get to it in the next 2 weeks. I mean, I'll do it in the next 2 weeks and send it to you. Let's put it that way.
Okay. Fair enough.
Man, this is so hard. It's like being in school again.
Hey. We have to hold ourselves to a higher standard of Babylon 5 knowledge.
Yes, no, you're right.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay, I think that'll do it for tonight.
Yeah, I think we've had enough of ourselves.
Quite. Oh, you might be quite right. Oh. As always, people, the website is babylonpodcast.com. Send us in your emails. Send us in if you want to record your own voicemails instead of calling our voicemail line. That email address is babylonpodcast@gmail.com. Visit the website and donate. Help support us so that we don't have hardware crapping out us all the time. And we have a Google Plus page now.
Apparently so.
I'm still figuring out how to do Hangouts and all these other little tricks of the trade. But we have a Google Plus page now. So feel free to join that to one of your circles or whatever other little things you can do. If there's something specific you want to see on that, send in an email. I can take a look at that. And as always, our voicemail line is 206-338-2259. That's 206-338-2259.
The year we came back from the long holiday break.
And we will see you next time on the other side of the never-ending argument.
Now, we did talk about Day of the Dead.
We did mention Lensman, though.